tried to think of some good things to say about her, and I pray that the higher power doesn't put other words in my mouth, because I really don't know what I'm going to say. I met Virginia, I'd say roughly 5 years ago. I liked what I saw. We've had some times together in meetings. We've had eyeball-to-eyeball discussions. I've heard little bits of her story. She is a good Allen Hunt in good standing of Logan. Help me welcome Virginia B.
Hello. My name is Virginia B., and I am from Wilkinson, West Virginia, which is a little suburb of Logan, West Virginia. Hi, everybody. There's something, if you are ever in a Logan group, and if I would happen to be chairing a meeting, I call it a love hug. And tonight, with this fabulous group that we have here, I think that it wouldn't hurt if we had that little love hug. Reach on either side and hug that person beside you. Tell them you love them. I do think why this is so very important to me, because many of you have heard me say that there was a time in my life that I would have given anything on earth for just a hug. So today, I am a loving person, a hugging person. I am a very grateful, recovering Al-Anon person. And I do attend three Al-Anon groups in the Logan area. One, I now am a GR of one of the groups. I had to laugh when I looked up on this stage tonight. Something came to my mind. I have been up here many times performing in a skit and had a few laughs, but tonight I won't be performing. And something else I think crossed my mind, I love this place so much here at Jackson's Mill. I do gain so much when I come here. I leave with serenity, because all of you beautiful people out there, just being here with you, I do get this serenity. But I have a very dear friend, Pete, who thinks the only reason I come here is for the fabulous food. I would like to thank the chairperson of the conference for inviting me here and allowing me to share some of my story with you. And I was thinking somewhere along the line that I had heard that if I reach one person out there tonight, then I feel that I have done my job in Al-Anon. But I would like to start off something, a little logo that goes something like this. Yes, yes, living in a no-no world. There were two frogs who jumped into a bucket of cream on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. One of the frogs says, "Maybe we'll give up," croaked one of them, after trying in vain to get out, said, "We're goners." "Keep on paddling," said the other frog. "We'll get out of this mess somehow." "It's no use," said the first. "Too thick to swim, too thin to jump, too slippery to crawl. We're bound to die sometime. So it may as well be tonight." So he sank to the bottom of the bucket and he died. His friend kept on paddling and paddling and paddling. and by morning he was perched on a mess of butter, which he had churned all by himself. And there he was, with a big grin on his face, flies swarming in every direction. So that little frog had discovered what most folks ignore. If you stick with the task long enough, you are going to be a winner. So this somehow I have related to my story. I have paddled, and I have paddled and paddled trying to work the Al-Anon program. And I feel that I have become a winner just by knowing and loving all of you beautiful people out there. I know one thing this program has taught me: to sweep in front of my own door and not to sweep in front of the doors of others. I know that I came in here with feelings of guilt for someone else's excessive drinking. I know that I had self-pity. I strived on resentment. I came in here with neurotic frustrations. My disease today, as I look at it, was far worse than the person who was doing the drinking. But through the 12 steps and you people who helped me, I learned that if I took an honest look at myself, that I could be helped. That if I used a broom for my own doorway, that there was hope. So tonight, I will share with you my story, which I like to label a story of hope. I don't like to call myself an old-timer in the Al-Anon program. My first meeting was in the year 58, if you want to count it up. I like to say that I am a long-timer in this program and very, very grateful for it. I will say tonight that my beautiful partner in life, he is not in the AA program, nor has he been in any recovery. He has never said that he was an alcoholic. So therefore tonight, I cannot tell you that he is an alcoholic. The only thing that I can say to you tonight is that his excessive drinking affected me. That is what had taken me to Al-Anon. I'll start, as we all kind of do, telling you a little bit about my background. I came from a little town called Sparta, Tennessee. I had one older brother. And there were no girls in the small community where we lived. There were only two other boys, my cousins. So therefore, they didn't want a little, as they call me, snotty-nosed brat hanging around with them. By the way, all three of these beautiful people today are confessed alcoholics. They didn't want me as a child, but today they have wanted me. I think they love me today. And I know that I love them. I was an unwanted child, from what I heard down through the family gossip, if any of you have had family gossip. My brother being the firstborn, this was all my parents had wanted. And Pete, my mother, didn't have the pill either. So therefore, I guess maybe from time of birth that I really was an unwanted child. And it's so strange that the only name that I had known was Sis. I was sister to my older brother. And you know, if you're familiar with down in Nashville country, because Sparta is pretty near Nashville, and any of you out there know anything about Minnie Pearl, you've always heard of her talk of brother. Have you ever heard Minnie give brother a name. So I've often wondered if maybe the unwanted siblings down in that part of the country, they just didn't bother to, you know, give them a name, sis and brother, that was it. So, but anyway, I had to laugh one day. I got to thinking, I did have one on brother because I could spell my name both backwards and frontwards and he couldn't, so, you know. But it was sad. Because even at this early age, I was trying to find my own identity, because I had none. I had no identity whatsoever. The first time that I ever discovered that I had a name was when I was enrolled in school, and I discovered that I had a name. In fact, I went around writing it on everything. Virginia Ansonette. To me, it was a beautiful name, a long name, kind of hard to say, but it was a beautiful name. So I guess in time, let's say that early in life, I learned to physically fight for survival. What I'm saying is, with three boys growing up, you learn to fight, and I mean literally fight. We fought with boxing gloves, or we fist fought, or whatever. What I got, I fought for it. And somehow I can never measure up with my brother. I recall my mother saying to me, why did God send you on me? You know, I didn't know. I was there. But it was always, why can't you behave like your brother? I didn't know why I couldn't behave like my brother. Today I know. I was begging for just an ounce of love growing up. So my brother, he did, of course, he went on and he fulfilled my father and mother's wishes. He became a pretty big celebrity in the sports field, let's say. So I began to capitalize on him again, really, because I found that if I could just say that I was Churchill's sister, I could get most anything that I wanted. So again, I had no identity. I was, at that time, known as my brother's sister again. At one point in my life, I had a bad weight problem, which I have today, but I was extremely heavy. And when I started into junior high in school, kids laughed at me. They made fun, especially the little boys. I recall them saying, "You have legs like an elephant." This can hurt an already sensitive child. And kids can be awfully cruel. So today they have a name for what I did. It's called today anorexia. But at that time there was no name. I starved myself. I recall my parents taking me to a doctor because I had one leg that had gone into paralysis. I couldn't move it from starvation. Well, in the way the doctors explained it, somehow that I needed nourishment to grow the bones, the nerves, or whatever. But can't you imagine when they told my parents this child is on starvation? You see, I was ill then. And in my mind today, this was trying to find again just an ounce of recognition, of love, of who I was. I kind of think today, and I feel sad about it in a way, because my partner today, my spouse, the beautiful man, came into my life at a very early age. He had spent a few years in the Navy, 5 years, and I thought that he knew everything. We eloped. And my parents, of course, disowned me. because they had plans out there for Virginia, and Virginia did not fulfill their plans. So we took off. He had an old car, I recall, and we were stranded someplace out near the Pittsburgh area. And we were sitting alongside the highway. We had no food, no money, no gas. Here we sat, but there was a bottle of wine in the car. And a beautiful preacher came by, and he said to us, he opened the car door up, "What are you two kids doing out where you are here?" We explained it to him. We had nothing. He took us home with him. He said, "I will take you home and give you something to eat." And I love this story because even back in those that time, my husband had a very sensitive stomach. And this dear lady, she had beautiful long gray hair, and she had prepared duck eggs for us. I had never seen a duck egg in my life, but it looked mighty good. But there was a gray hair right across my husband's duck egg, and I saw him lift it off and gulp that duck egg down. So this was just a little bit. This was the beginning of what we had, what I like to call a whirlwind future ahead of us. We went to Michigan, and a beautiful, lovely aunt took us in, and she was a go-getter, and I think this is what I needed. She, in other words, today I'm so grateful for her because she was, to my thinking back now, she gave me the start. She made me feel important. She told me I could do and I could be. So I went out and I found a job. I was a salesperson, and within 3 months, I was in a buyer's department. I always got along very well with people. I loved people, probably because I wanted to be loved. I set a goal, I think, in my life at that time. I wanted the material things in life. So I worked hard, and I saved hard, and I bought what I wanted, or I felt that would make me feel good. I recall that, of course, my husband always had good jobs. As long as I was able there to collect a paycheck on the time paydays came around, he made good money, and I also made good money even back in those days. But, of course, the drinking got worse, and I got worse. And I can only say, or give you a little bit, I will not tell his story because he has no story, as he says, to tell, but I do have. But I will have to bring him in to let you know just a little of what happened. I recall I had so many phobias. I remember that we had started a bank account, and he told me he would make a deposit that day at work. And this beautiful young girl that used to come around selling Look magazines, you know, so she comes in the garage, and so he takes our bank deposit, and he buys a Look magazine, right? So the rest of the money, you know where it went. Do you know that I guess it was for years I could not look at a Look magazine? If I even passed a newsstand and I saw a Look magazine, there went my head. I didn't want to see it because he wouldn't be home for 3 weeks, you know. So anyway, another one. I have to laugh. But not too long ago, a friend was here visiting me from Michigan, which we were neighbors. And her husband was a drinking partner of my husband's. We, of course, it gets mighty cold up in Michigan, if any of you have lived there. And he would usually put on long underwear to wear when it was real cold. Well, when he'd take off that long underwear, he somehow didn't show up for a week, you know. So that in itself When he and I saw that he put on that short underwear, I knew that he would not be home, and sure enough, he didn't. So I used to pray for snow. I mean, it let it snow. But this is how sick that Virginia was. So the drinking did get worse, as I was saying, and so did I. In fact, that I had gotten so far down. At this time, the work was bad. It was almost like it is now. In fact, I think it was even worse in the Michigan area. There were no jobs. But somehow he managed to always, as many of you know, to get drink money regardless. That was always there. So I had then just a part-time job on a call basis, where maybe I would work maybe 3 days a week on call. And I recall I had an old army-colored green pair of slacks with an army green-colored top. I mean, I can think of it today and almost gag, but I had had this outfit on for, I know, a week and hadn't changed. I hadn't been called into work. There was no need to change. One morning I looked at myself in the mirror and I really couldn't believe what I saw. There was no point in combing my hair. There was no point in doing anything. I happened to pick up a Detroit Free Press. Somewhere in Ann Landers' column, there was a little article in there concerning drinking, the alcoholic. If you need help, get in touch with the Detroit Downtown Central office. I called this number, and oh my heavens today, I could hear that woman's voice on the other end of that line. It was like an angel out of heaven. How could anybody talk this calm and this good to me? She told me about Al-Anon. She told me where there was a meeting that night. It was 30 miles away from my home, the closest one. Now, if you can visualize this, I drove that night, this 30 miles, and pouring down rain. She told me it was to be at a Methodist church. She also told me about the anonymity of the program. So I get to this church, and my gosh, this whole parking lot, it is filled with cars. And I thought, boy, that's a lot of people, you know. So I run into this church, and this beautiful woman greets me in this long gown, and she had a name tag on her that had her full name. Now, here I am in my old army green, plus walking out the parking lot, soaking wet, hair wet. And I said, can you help me? I need Al-Anon. She said, what, honey? I said, they told me from downtown Detroit. I was crying at this time. She said, honey, I think you need to go downstairs in the basement and around the corner. But thank God that I went downstairs and around the corner that night. I met beautiful people in this program. Of course, it was in the early days then. In the year 58, we did not have the beautiful material today, all these hardback books and so on. All we had was like maybe three little pamphlets to go on. I didn't have you people, the strong ones out here. It was, in other words, all of us almost too sick to help each other, but we tried. And I did get help. I got help that I had never known before in my life. I was in Al-Anon for 6 years. I recall one night coming home from work, and my spouse hadn't been home for 3 days, and I was at the supermarket checking out, and we had a little township paper, so they had it on display there at the end of the checkout counter. The first thing that I saw in gigantic headlines, Belleville man runs Wayne County Sheriff off highway. He had made the headlines, so I knew where he was. But I accepted it because I had been in this program long enough that I knew that I had to go on. I had a job, and I also had myself. I had 6 years of Al-Anon behind me. His family blamed me for all of the downfalls in our marriage. My family blamed me because I was too aggressive. I was blamed for everything, but I thought that I was strong enough to, in other words, whip anything out there. I could conquer anything. So I relocated, and I went to where my husband's family lived. I wasn't all that strong. In the meantime, my father was dying with cancer. And I was called out of town, away from my home. Maybe in the middle of the night. I didn't have you good people to stand by me. I was not working at this time now. I can't really recall, and it's unimportant today, just what did happen. The only thing that I do know that happened, that I got sick again, only sicker. When any of you AAs out there, when I hear a lead that tells me that you've had a slip and you went back threefold, I can relate to you because I had a slip and I went all the way back. Things got from bad to worse again. And I would recall I did have again a part-time job, but I was not mentally or physically able to work. When I would leave for work, I would hide the iron. I would put it in behind pots and pans in the oven. I would hide any jewelry that was out, because everything was being removed from my home. I again was called by my father's bedside that he was dying. There is a period here that I cannot bring into my mind too well. The only thing that I can really recall that happened, we had this lovely home, we had cars, we had most anything, let's say, that a middle class family had. I was an antique bug. I loved to take an old piece of furniture and remake it. Anything old to restore. I had tried all those years to restore this one person in my life, but failed. But I recall this one thing that come and is so vivid in my mind. We were being evicted from our home. And I had this beautiful Victorian washstand, which I treasured. My mother once told me that my home and my dog was a sin to me, whatever she meant. But I did love my home and I loved my dog. But I recall seeing this beautiful washstand of mine sitting out on the street under a maple tree. And I had my bathroom, I had it done in like a trellis type with ivy running on it, and this is where that I could always go and feel a little bit of comfort. I rolled in there, and I sat down, and I don't know how long I was there or how hard I cried, because I had a mental breakdown. Some I have heard say you do not have breakdowns. Whatever it was, I lost touch of reality. Nothing mattered. There was nothing there. Nothing. I call it self-inflicted wounds. But again, too, I call it I was a sick person and couldn't help myself. My parents took me in, and God bless them, what they did for me. But they were taking me to a hospital. And on the way to the hospital, the ambulance wrecked with me. My back was broke. They thought I had a brain tumor. I was in the hospital for 17 days, and they came one night about 6 o'clock, and they says to me, Virginia, here stood the bone specialist. We are going to have to remove the cast because in the morning you will be going in for surgery. We have found cancer. Would you let us get in touch with your family? I didn't want that because my mother at this time was trying to nurse my father who was dying with cancer. I didn't want my family to know because I did not know where my husband was, and I'm sure he was the last one that I had wanted to know. The next morning, I did go into surgery. This was near Christmas time. Of course, they had to put the body cast back on me. They were letting my father come home for Christmas holidays. So they allowed me to go home for the Christmas holidays to be with my father. My mother, being the devout believer in God, she prayed many of a prayer for me. I recall the neighbors had come in to say their goodbyes because at this time I weighed 98 pounds with what? A body cast from here to here. So they knew, I'm sure, that this old gal wasn't coming back. But somehow my mother knew that I was coming back. So I did go back into the hospital. They told me that I would have to be in there for at least 7 or 8 days before they continued with the surgery. The cancer was gone. I recall I had given up on life. My parents knew this. My father stood at my bed one morning, and he took his fingers and he just tickled my toes like that, and he said, you know that I'm ashamed of you, my daughter. He said, with no more guts than you've got. He said, I'm a fighter. Look at me. I'm dying, and I'm still fighting. From that day on, I started to fight. I fought for survival. I began, in other words, to learn to walk again. I began to learn to live again. I do remember one thing so beautiful. My husband had heard, I guess, in the condition, of course, he always ran from responsibility. But I think that he did hear about my condition, so he came to visit me. I have seen this man cry twice in the 35 years. When he came to see me, he did cry. He said, Virginia, I love you. What have I done to you? We did not go back together, but we did communicate, and some of the most beautiful love letters. I never had a love letter, and he began to write me love letters. I did lose my father. He did die. I lost my dog, which I had had 9 years. Within a 2-year period, I lost my mother. The following 4 months, I lost the aunt, which had been my second mother. The following 6 months, I lost the uncle, which had been my second father. But I'm telling you, if you call upon a higher power, which I choose today to call God, he will work things out, not your way, his way. I recall the night at my mother's wake, my husband came to the door. That was the second time that I had seen him cry. He had tears in his eyes and drink on his breath. He said, "Virginia, what can I do to help you?" I don't know the love that I had for this human being. Somehow it was like a magnet. I'm a firm believer when one door closes, another opens. I am a firm believer in this. I was living in an apartment at this time. I did have a job, but by now I traveled quite a bit and enjoyed my work. I was with a merchandising company. But I had made up my mind that I was not. You see, I had already filed for divorce. There was no way that I was going to live with this person in my life, because I knew what it had done to me, and I could no longer go down that drain again. When he came to the door that night, I had not laid eyes on him. Well, not in fact, I don't know how long it had been since I had seen him, but 9 months, we didn't know whether he was living or dead. They could not find him to serve papers on him. But I had made up my mind. I could no longer take it. No longer take it. But the night he came to this door, I was behind on my rent. And he said, "I would like to help you if I could." It was almost like a magnet. This person came back into my life. He stood by me when he was at the funeral the next day at my mother's funeral, and he stood by me, which at that time I needed somebody. One thing that I can say here today that I do like me, I am Virginia Antoinette, and I don't have to be somebody. I am somebody. I would also like to say that all my faults were because of another, but they are not. Step one tells me that I am powerless over another's life, one that is obsessed with drinking or whatever. And two, you have taught me that I am not responsible for another person, which I had thought all those years that I was. And this step also tells me that my own life had become unmanageable, that my first task is to manage my own life. And in my fourth step inventory, I found that I was no longer to blame another person in my life for my soul sickness or for my restlessness or my feeling of inadequacies. All of my troubles that I had brought upon myself, trying to reach perfection, which I could never do. But you have taught me that I don't have to be perfect, because I never will be. But I do like that little ditto that says, I do not President, I may not be perfect, but there are parts of me that are excellent. I like that. But I had to have the courage to face up to my own shortcomings and do something about them, just me and no one else's. And step two taught me, with you beautiful people out there, the help of you, I don't know where I'd be today. That a power greater than I am could restore me to sanity. This today I truly believe. And step three told me that if I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, that there are all kinds of new doors that will open for you, in which I have today tried to do that. I'd like to say to any newcomer that might be here tonight, I'd like to hand all of this to you on a silver platter and say, here it is. This is the miracle. This is the way that it works. But it isn't that easy. The serenity that you gain from living this way of life to me is worth all the hardships that you go through. Today, I never thought I'd ever be able to say that. But the hardships and the adversities that I have had, I have learned from, and I wouldn't trade them today because I'm afraid to even think about maybe of the human being that I would have been. I guess that one thing I'd like to say, that I am living proof that without you people out there, that I can't make it. Today I would like to say that I am living with sobriety. I have heard around the AA program that there are no bad ways to get sober. I don't question why or how or where. I just say, thank you, higher power, and enjoy each day of it, each minute. I tell this person I love him because I do love him. In fact, I write him little notes and put them in his sandwiches when he goes off to work and say, I love you. God does help us when we least expect it. Today I can only say that I am so grateful for having known all of you. So I won't take up too more time, it's getting late, but I do love this little piece of poetry that I do want to read. The search is yours and mine, each finds his way with help, but yet alone. Serenity is the goal. It comes to those who learn to wait and grow. For each can learn to understand himself and say, I've found joy in being I and knowing you. A knowledge of the depths I can descend. A chance to climb the heights above my head. The way is not easy all the time. Our feet will stumble often as we go. A friend may need to give some extra help as we once gave others. When in the hour of fear, this is no picnic path that we have found, but yet compared to other days and other times, it seems a better route. We lost our way before in fear, in guilt, resentments held too long, self-pity had its way with us. We found the perfect alibi for all of our faults. We do not know what life may bring from day to day. Tomorrow is a task not yet begun, and we could fail to pass its test, but this will wait. While in today, we do the best we can. Today, we try to grow. Today, we live. We seek. We know. We give to share with you. I love all of you beautiful people so much, and I hope that you will always love me. Thank you very much.